Chapter 16. Mr. Sideways. The old boys in the villages around Granny Weatherwax's cottage had swiftly taken a liking to Geoffrey. They respected Nanny Ogg and Tiffany, of course, but they really liked Geoffrey. They would taunt him sometimes. After all, he was in a woman's business. But when he got on his broomstick, sometimes even with his goat perched behind him rather than harnessed to its little cart, and whizzed away to the horizon, they were speechless. Even when he was really busy, he always had time to stop and chat, and there was always a brew on in any shed when he came by, and a broken biscuit for Mephistopheles. The old boys were fascinated by the goat, but wary, nonetheless, after the day when someone gave it a drink of ale just to see what would happen, and to their astonishment, Mephistopheles danced like a ballerina and then kicked a young tree so hard that its trunk split in two.
"It's like those folk who do mushy," said Stinky Jim.
"I don't think that's the right word," said Smack Tremble. "Ain't mushy something you eat out in foreign parts?"
"You mean, one man he go up, he go down," Captain Makepeace said. "A way of fighting."
"That's it," said Stinky Jim. "There was this fellow at the market in Slice who could do that. There's a lot of people in Slice who can do that kind of thing," Smack Tremble added with a shiver. "Odd place, Slice."
"Quite correct. As the common joke says, most inhabitants of Slice are more than one slice short of a loaf." They sat and thought about Slice for a moment. You could find anything at Slice Market if you looked hard enough. Famously, a man once sold his wife there, where the phrase bring and buy was taken literally, and he went home with a second-hand wheelbarrow and felt he had the best of the bargain. Then they looked at the remains of the sapling and agreed that Mephistopheles was indeed a remarkable goat, but perhaps it would be best to leave his diet alone. The remarkable goat himself stoically chewed his way through the long grass by the pub fence as though nothing untoward had happened, and then trotted off to find Geoffrey. On this particular fine morning, Geoffrey was at Laughing Boy Sideways' house. Tiffany had been treating a particularly troublesome bunion of his, which had resisted her ministrations for weeks. She had been considering breaking her rule and using magic on the thing just to be done with it when Geoffrey decided to pop in to see Mr. Sideways on a day when Tiffany was away at the chalk. He found the old man by the back door of his cottage, just about to hobble down the path to the old barn. Instead of heading back into the cottage, as he would have done if Tiffany had called, Mr. Sideways beckoned to Geoffrey to follow him down the path toward the rickety barn. And it was as Geoffrey watched the old boy struggling painfully along in his old army boots that he noticed something very wrong.
"Well, dang me," Mr. Sideways said, when Geoffrey prized the offending hobnail from his left boot. "If I'd known that was what the trouble was, I'd have dealt with the bugger myself."
He looked at Geoffrey with bright eyes.
"Thank ye, lad."
Old Mr. Sideways lived on his own, and had done so for as long as anyone could remember. He was meticulously dressed, and in the city might have been described as dapper. Apart from his work overalls, which were washed regularly but were streaked with paint and oil, he was always spick and span. So was his little cottage. The living room, which he kept immaculately tidy, had paintings of people in old-fashioned dress on the wall. Geoffrey assumed these were portraits of Mr. Sideways' parents, although he never spoke of them. Everything the man did, he did carefully. Geoffrey liked him, and even though he was a very private man, he had taken to Geoffrey. The shed Mr. Sideways had constructed adjacent to the old barn was also immaculate. Every shelf was neatly stacked with carefully labelled old tobacco tins and jars. His tools were hung against the walls, neatly ranked by size. They were clean and sharp, too. Tiffany had never been allowed beyond Mr. Sideways's living room, but Geoffrey had soon been welcomed to share a mug of tea and a biscuit in the shed by the barn. Each one of the sheds Geoffrey visited on his rounds of the old boys was different, expressing the personality of the occupant, unfettered by female intervention. Some were chaotic, with piles of scrap and half-made objects scattered about. Others were tidier, like Captain Makepeace's shed, which was full of paints, brushes and canvases, but still had a clear sense of order. But no one was as tidy as Mr. Sideways. And then Geoffrey noticed something missing. All the other sheds had at least one work-in-progress visible, whether it was a half-made bird table or a stripped-down wheelbarrow with a new shaft. But there was nothing like that to be seen in Mr. Sideways's shed, and he evaded the question when Geoffrey asked what he was working on.
"What are you up to, Mr. Sideways?" Geoffrey asked. "You look like a man who has been thinking, and I know you are a canny man at that."
Mr. Sideways cleared his throat.
"Well, you see, lad, I am building a machine. I've no interest in bird tables or mug trees and the like, but machines now."
He paused, then looked carefully at Geoffrey.
"I've been thinking that it might be useful, what with the troubles folks are having."
Geoffrey sat calmly, waiting for the old boy to finish his tea and reach a conclusion. Eventually, Mr. Sideways put down his mug and stood up, brushing the crumbs off his lap. He swept them up with a small pan and brush he clearly kept just for that purpose, washed out the mugs, dried and stacked them neatly on a shelf, then opened the door.
"Would you like to see, lad?"
While Geoffrey drank his mug of tea with Mr. Sideways in Lanka, over in the chalk, Letitia, the Baroness, was sipping tea daintily with Magrat, the Queen of Lanka, who had arrived unexpectedly on her broomstick. A broomstick flying the pennant of Lanka, the two bears on black and gold, just to make sure that nobody could be in any doubt that this was a royal visit. She had arrived, bearing a bunch of roses from the castle, throwing Letitia and her staff all in the tiswas, and Letitia flapping about the cobwebs, some of which she had even managed to get tangled in her hair. Magrat had smiled at the rather shaky-looking Letitia, and said, "I'm not here as queen, love. I'm here as a witch. I always have been one, and always will be, so don't worry about all the pomp. You know how it is, it's just expected. Bit of dust here and there is nothing. Some parts of my castle are full of dust, I'm sorry to say. You know how that is, too."
Letitia had nodded. She did indeed know what it was like. And as for the plumbing, well, she did not want to even think about how old-fashioned the castle was. The ancient privies had a habit of gurgling at the wrong time, and Roland said that if he had the time, he could create an orchestra from the bangs, gurgles, and clankings that sometimes followed his morning visits. She had rallied the troops, though, and now the two ladies sat side by side in the castle hall, breathing in the peaty fumes from the fireplace. It was always, always cold there, even in summer, which was why the fireplaces were so big and ate several small trees at a time. The kitchen staff had brought out a hasty tray with tea and little snacks, and yes, the sandwiches did have the crusts cut off to make them appropriately dainty for the two noble ladies. Magrat sighed. She really hoped Letitia at least asked for the crusts to be given to the birds. There was also a plate of rather wobbly cupcakes. It appears to be a fact of life that if two or more well-born ladies should gather together, cupcakes are essential. Otherwise the ceiling might fall on them.
"I made those," Letitia said proudly, "yesterday, from a recipe in Nanny Ogg's new cookbook. You know, a lot of what you fancy makes you fat."
She coloured a little, and her hand crept self-consciously up to her bodice, where it was clear that when curves were being handed out, Letitia had been at the end of the line. Magrat took a cake by its little case rather carefully. Some of Nanny Ogg's recipes could include unusual ingredients, and she already had three children. She nibbled at the little cake, and the two ladies exchanged the usual pleasantries, with Magrat admiring a watercolour Letitia had painted of the chalk giant up on the downlands. It was surprisingly detailed, especially in the no-trousers area. Nanny Ogg would definitely have approved, Magrat thought. Then she got down to business.
"Well," she said, "I'm sure I don't need to tell you, Letitia, but up in Lanka we've had enough of the elves. Something must be done." "Oh, dear, I'm sorry to say that Roland is about to write to Mistress Aching about the wave of elf raids and ask her what she's proposing to do about them. There have been an awful lot of complaints, you know, and he's out inspecting the damage."
Letitia sighed. She understood that her husband, looking at the damage, comprised more than just inspecting the aftermath and saying, "Tsks," and "How long has this been going on?" It needed to include other things to make his tenants feel that someone was doing something about it. And Roland's wife had impressed on him that this was not just a matter of being seen, but that rolling up his sleeves and getting stuck in alongside his men was good for morale. Even better if he bought a round in the pub when the day's work was done and became not just the boss but almost a friend. "We've got men enough here, no doubt about it," she added, "but most of the time they are working on the farms. It would be appreciated if other witches could help." "And unfortunately that means us," Magrat said smartly, with the emphasis on the us part. Letitia looked embarrassed. "I'm not a proper witch, you know." Magrat looked at the Baroness. There was something terribly soggy about Letitia, as if you could pick her up and wring her out. But witches came in all shapes and sizes. Both Nanny Ogg and Agnes Knitt, for instance, were decidedly plump. a very kind term for Agnes, used only by her friends. While long, tall, short, fat Sally went up and down according to the tides, and there was no doubt the water could be powerful.
"My dear, you are selling yourself short," she said. "And I know what it is. I believe, my dear, that you are frightened that you wouldn't make the grade as a witch. We all went through that. Girls normally do. Tiffany has told me all about you, you know.
As for me, I don't know what I would be like in a house with a screaming skeleton. Were you not the girl who gave a headless ghost a pumpkin to carry round, and handed a teddy bear to a screaming skeleton for comfort? You don't think you're a witch, but every part of my soul says you are. I wish I'd had your opportunities when I was a girl."
"But I am the Baroness. I am a lady. I can't be a witch."
Magrat made a sound like and said, "Well, I am a queen. That doesn't stop me being a witch when needs must. This is the time, my dear, when we stop thinking about ourselves and who we are and get down and dirty. Tiffany cannot fight the elves on her own, and this is a war, and it will keep on going unless everyone pitches in."
Her words flowed in and filled Letitia.
"You are right, of course," the young Baroness said. "Naturally, Roland will agree with me, as he always does. Count me in."
"Good," said Magrat. "I have got some chain mail, which I think is your size. And now, how soon can you leave for Lanka? I believe we are meeting to discuss the situation. Can you ride a broomstick, or do you need a lift?"
Tiffany straddled her broomstick. She had heard in the village that old Mrs. Pigeon was near her time, and a wave of guilt had flooded through her. Yes, she had two steadings. Yes, she had to work out what to do with Nightshade. Yes, she had no time to rest. But she hadn't seen the old lady for over a week, and in a week an old lady could fall through the cracks of life.
Nightshade was perched behind her, her sharp eyes noting everything. Noting how the Pigeon family had only the smallest plot of land, with soil so poor it was a wonder they got a crop out of it at all, their fortunes depending mostly on the little flock of sheep they had in their field by the stream. Sid Pigeon, the youngest son, was there, looking much smaller somehow without his shiny railway uniform. To Tiffany's surprise, he'd brought a new work friend home with him. Nightshade recoiled.
"A goblin? In their house? Stinking?" she said with distaste.
Tiffany felt like kicking her. "A very respectable goblin," she said smartly, though it was true that she could smell the goblin as soon as she went into the house, even over the layers of other smells happily living in that very dirty home. She nodded to the goblin, who was sitting with his feet up on the table, eating what looked like a chicken leg that others, possibly the cats, had had a go at before him.
Sid's friend.
"Off piston the steam, mistress," the goblin said cheerfully. "Works with the iron and steel, I does."
"Tiffany," Sid said urgently, "have you come to see Granny? She's in bed upstairs." Old Mrs. Pigeon was indeed in her bed, and it didn't look to Tiffany as if she was likely to be getting out of it ever again. The old lady was little more than a wrinkled set of bones, her twig-like fingers clutching at the edges of a faded patchwork quilt. Tiffany reached out and held one of her hands, and did what she could for the old lady, calling the pain out of the shrunken body. And all hell broke loose downstairs.
"Sid, them pesky fairies or whatever, they've only gone and fouled the stream. It's all yellow, and there's dead fish floating in it. We've got to move the sheep, now."
Mr. Pigeon sounded desperate as he called to his son. As a thunder of boots left the house, Tiffany held her concentration, drew more pain from old Mrs. Pigeon, and then Nightshade was at her side.
"I don't understand," she said. "That goblin went with the humans."
"It's called helping," Tiffany said smartly,
still trying to hold on to the pain she had taken from old Mrs. Pigeon. "Remember?"
"But goblins and humans don't like each other," Nightshade continued, puzzled.
"I told you, Off Piston the Steam is Sid's friend, but this isn't about liking," Tiffany said. "It's about helping each other out. If the goblin camp was on fire or something, the humans would help them."
She looked down at Mrs. Pigeon. The old lady was falling into a sleep now.
"Look, I need to go outside for a minute," she said. "Stay with Mrs. Pigeon, would you? Let me know if she wakes again."
Nightshade was horrified. "But I can't. I'm an elf. I've already carried that basket. I can't help another human."
"Why not?"
said Tiffany sharply.
of Piston the Steam just did. Are elves less than goblins? But she had no time to waste, so she headed downstairs and threw the pane out into a pile of stones laid ready for building into a wall. It made a rather unfortunate loud bang. There had been quite a lot of pane, which is probably why, when she got back upstairs, Mrs. Pigeon had woken up and asked for a cup of water. The old granny was staring up at Nightshade, a smile on her gummy face, as she reached out for the cup.
"You're a good girl, you are," she was saying weakly. "A good girl."
"A good girl? A good elf?" Nightshade put her hands to her stomach.
"I think it is beginning," she said softly, looking up at Tiffany. "I feel a sort of warm spot here in my stomach, a little glow."
Tiffany smiled, laid a gentling hand on Mrs. Pigeon, and then took Nightshade by the arm. "I need your help," she said. "Elves have put this glamour on the stream, and it runs past several farms. Can you put it right?" She paused. "As your friend, Nightshade, I'm asking for your help. The Feagles can help with the sheep, but to remove the glamour, this is something only one of your kind can do." Nightshade stood up.
"A glamour from Peas Blossom," she said. "This will be no trouble to remove. That elf is weak. And yes, I will help you, Tiffany. You are my friend."
The word sounded odd in her voice, but there was no doubt that she meant it. So she went down into the fields with Tiffany, past the skittish sheep in the yard, some of whom, courtesy of the ever-present Feagles, had just broken the county record for stream-to-yard time, one young lamb actually doing so on one leg, and down to the boiling water, where she did indeed put it right, and the tiny little glow inside began to smoulder. The old barn behind Mr. Sideways's shed was full of miscellaneous weaponry, souvenirs from many conflicts, lovingly oiled and meticulously labelled.
"I've been collecting 'em," Mr. Sideways said proudly. "Every campaign I've been in, and more besides. You should always keep your weapons handy. I mean, I don't say anything bad about trolls and the dwarfs, but we fought them more than once, and so I say you always have to make sure. Somebody says something, and before you know it, we're knee-deep in dwarfs. They give you the up and under. You can't trust them with the up and under."
Geoffrey looked around the walls of the barn in astonishment. The machinery of death was everywhere if you looked at it properly. And there he was, this smiling old man with whom he'd just been sharing a cup of tea, eyes sparkling, ready to face the foe, especially if it wasn't human. And he was known as Laughing Boy. What would he have been like if he had been known as Scowling Boy?
"I can turn a lathe as good as anybody," Mr. Sideways said.
"A lathe," said Geoffrey. "You get swarf, don't you?"
"Oh, yes. Terrible stuff if it gets in your eye," he smiled. "And it could be useful for something."
There was a moment when he almost led Geoffrey back out again, but then he could not hold it in any longer. He had to show the boy what he'd been working on.
"Come, lad, have a look at this. It was going to be a secret until it was finished, but of course I can tell you."
At the back of the barn there was a huge shape covered with a tarpaulin. Mr. Sideways led Geoffrey over to it, reached up and gave the tarpaulin a tug. As it fell away, Geoffrey gasped. The machine looked like a great metal grasshopper, with a counterweight at one end and an enormous leather sling at the other. As he gazed at the machine in astonishment, Geoffrey realized that he had seen something similar in the books Mr. Wiggle had showed him at home. He said, "This looks dangerous."
"I hope so," said Mr. Sideways. "I've always wanted one of these, ever since I saw them in action. The dwarfs had ones a bit like this, which could throw a troll flat on his back. Those dwarfs know a thing or two, I must say, and I'm very big on gnome defence." He coughed. "Got the idea to build one after I'd been watching the lads down the pub do the stick and bucket dance."
A dance that should only be performed when no women are nearby. If you saw it, you would know why.
"So I see," said Geoffrey. "Captain Makepeace is very impressed," Mr. Sideways added. "So me and the boys are going to try it out tomorrow, but nowhere anyone can see us."
These old gentlemen have certain qualities, Geoffrey thought. Just because they are old doesn't mean they can't be powerful.